A strong leader, focused, positive, a man who's highly respected, a man who cares for each member of the team. That's how Alex Gordon describes Dayton Moore, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, who has a new book out that describes how he instilled a winning attitude on a team that had made losing its culture. That book, More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. Dayton Moore, welcome back.
Thanks, so good Steve. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Well, I love this story from the book. June 2006, Dayton, you're about to be introduced as the Royals' new general manager. Your first news conference here, and shortly before that news conference, you did an interview with ESPN. The interview went fine, but what happened after that interview that you still remember to this day?
You know, it kind of shocked me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we did the interview, and as you said, I thought it went well, and once it was completed, the cameraman said, "Congratulations, now you're the general manager of a minor league team that has to play in the major leagues."
Yeah.
And I thought he was joking, and I looked at the expression on his face, and
he was
direct, and fortunately, the gal doing the interview kind of put him in his place a little bit. But you know, there was just a lot of negativity, you know, around the team. And this was the Royals, as you know, was a model organization back in the late 70s and the 80s. And it's kind of lost its way a little bit.
And to what extent were you thinking as you got started here? You talk in the book very directly, Dayton, about having a few second thoughts creeping in, like, have you done the right thing for a career that looks so promising coming out of Atlanta? And here you are thinking, man, I don't know what I got myself into.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, early on in the process, you know, we realized that this was going to be a big, big challenge. And, you know, everybody that we brought on board, we tried to convey that challenge to them.
Yeah.
We didn't want to sugarcoat anything and let them know that this was going to be tough. And we were going to have to work together and support one another. But we wanted to do something special for our community in Kansas City and build this baseball team.
I love this line from the book. You started to think about the story coming here in Kansas City and the story of being here. It started to look less like a fairy tale and more like a Stephen King novel. You get the idea pretty clearly there.
I mean, it's, you know, when you put yourself out there in the arena, I mean, you're going to get attacked. There's going to be criticism that comes your way. And you got to have, you know, quality people around you and rely on togetherness and kind of an attitude, somewhat of a stubbornness, too, you know, going forward, just staying strong in your convictions. And, you know, we felt like we knew how to build a farm system and lay the foundation for what it was going to take to be successful at the major league level.
And you knew coming out of the gate it was going to take 6 years, maybe 8 years. It wound up taking that many. That's a lot of years.
You know, we felt it was going to be an 8 to 10 year process. And I said that, I want to say, in 2009, in the fall of 2009, and in an interview, I was very candid about that. And you know, obviously, it raised a lot of eyebrows. And for a fan base that had been so patient for many, many years to hear that, they didn't want to. And I don't blame them. But we tried to communicate very honestly and in a very transparent way so our fans could understand what we were trying to do.
And you knew it would take 8 or 10 years because you also knew that this was a franchise in the heart of the country that couldn't go out and spend big money on free agents. You had to do it the old-fashioned way by building the team from the bottom up.
We had to. We had to, as you said, build that foundation. And everybody knows that follows baseball. You take a player out of high school in the draft, it's three and a half years before they can make it to the major leagues if everything goes well. And then another 2 to 4 years of playing every day at the major league level to become a consistent producer. And we needed multitudes of players coming up together. And fortunately, the great work of our scouting and development people have been able to accomplish that.
So you come here in 2006, and I'm wondering, how did you personally get through all the darkness?
Well, great support system with the fans. Our fans are very encouraging. The Glass family was very supportive. Of course, Marianne and my family were very supportive. My faith weighs deeply into my convictions, and you know, so you rely on, you know, all those things. But our fans were so encouraging, and as I said, the more we were out speaking in public and being transparent with what we were trying to do, they bought in and stayed with us, and I think that gave Mr. Glass a reason to stay with us as well.
You also took some long walks with your wife. What did you guys talk about in those long walks in those early days?
Well, she mostly listened to me, Vin. I often say that you know, Mary Ann's the greatest encourager I've ever been around. And, you know, she was always just very supportive and, you know, would always shift it to life and what you're trying to do and what our processes are with, you know, growing leaders and growing people within our department. And often challenged me that the most important thing is to build an incredible workplace and create an environment where people enjoy each other, enjoy growing professionally.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tried to make it about that.
In the middle of all this, you had a phone call from a man named John Schuerholz, a name very familiar to longtime Royals fans who used to be with this organization. He was your mentor at the Atlanta Braves, Dayton. He gave you some advice that you still remember. He said what?
Well, John has given me a lot of advice through the years. And, you know, you'll watch John model, you know, his lifestyle professionally and personally. I mean, it's an easy one to follow. I mean, he's an incredible leader. But, you know, John always said, you know, Dayton, I understand you guys are going to build a great farm system, but never lose sight of winning on the field at the major league level. It's going to be very important to you because if you don't and start showing some success with the major league team, the fans will certainly, you know, they'll lose hope. And they'll,
so you had to do both. You had to win a little bit and you had to build the system.
And that was our challenge. I mean, we had to make sure that we didn't lose sight of what was truly important initially, and that's to get this farm system built because we know our success was going to be predicated on growing our own. But you had to try to win enough games at the major league level and keep that part of your fan base alive and coming out to the ballpark and being able to enjoy the competition on the field.
Well, let's talk about how you did it. You didn't fire anybody right away, Dayton, even though the team had struggled so much, but you did make some changes. And one of those changes was a man named Dean Taylor, a longtime baseball executive. Who is he and what did he bring to your organization?
Well, I first met Dean. He was assistant GM with the Braves when I joined the Atlanta Braves as an area scouting supervisor. And then a few years later, I moved into the office, and Dean was an executive there, very impactful for the success of the Atlanta Braves.
He has strengths that you don't have.
Well, absolutely, he does. And, you know, Dean's a terrific administrator, great with roster management.
And contracts.
Contracts, negotiator. And truthfully, I probably would have maybe not taken this job in Kansas City if Dean wouldn't have agreed to come with us and be a part of our leadership team here in Kansas City. He meant that much to me. And I've always been somebody that knows what I don't know. And I needed somebody like Dean Taylor. Great trust, great expertise. I believe he's one of the very best executives that the game has ever seen.
Yeah. Another front office addition, Rene Francisco. Again, names that a lot of fans may not even be familiar with. What responsibility did you place on his shoulders?
Well, the high-ceiling talent in our game has been coming from Latin America. The Royals were dead last in expenditures in Latin America from 1996 to 2006. Rene's job was to build our program internationally, exclusively in Latin America, and Rene's done an incredible job in doing that. I mean, look at Salvador Perez, Yordano Ventura, Kelvin Herrera, and others that are on the come that we have in our system now. Perhaps our best prospect is a young shortstop by the name of Raul Mondesi, and we've got several other guys within the pipeline that have come from Latin America, and through Rene and Orlando Estevez and Victor Baez and so many others, built a very strong international program now.
In those early days, Dayton, you write that you needed energy givers as opposed to energy suckers. What does that mean?
You know, Trey Hillman and I would often talk about that.
The former manager of the Royals,
Trey, and the importance of having people that are going to bring energy and bring value every single day and do everything that we could to divorce ourselves from those that were going to try to suck the life right out of you. And when you're losing, the morale is naturally poor. And we needed people that were going to breathe life on each other, contribute to the organization in a positive way, expect good things to happen. You know, guys like Rusty Koontz.
I was going to say, he's your first base coach, a classic example of what you're talking about.
I mean, Rusty is such a great energy giver. And, you know, a guy like Mike Sweeney, who our fans can obviously relate to, is now working, you know, with us and doing some things.
And going to be in the Hall of Fame this summer.
Yeah, going to be in the Hall of Fame. He'll be inducted in August of this year. And, you know, Sweens is an example of that. George Brett's an example of that. George brings energy and passion with everything that he does. So we wanted to make sure that we had people like that around our players every day.
Again, our guest, Royals General Manager Dayton Moore. You also placed a premium on gray-haired men. Who are the gray-haired men, and just by the for the record, you're one of those guys now, Dayton. I hate to break this to you.
You know, I know.
I'm looking at it.
I know. 8 years ago, I didn't have much, but it's full now. But, you know, you got to have wisdom. You got to have those guys that have been in the trenches. And I know the hardest thing for me to do as a young person, and even today, is trusting the experience of others. But you have to have those people around. You're going to be honest and upfront. You know, Donnie Williams, who works with us and actually broke me in as a scout when I was with the Braves, is part of that. And we talk about, there was a circumstance and a situation in the book where in the winter meetings in 2013, and we felt we had a pretty good team, and we were starting to make, you know, look at different trades and different ideas. And, you know, Donnie got me off to the side in a quiet moment and stuck his finger in my face, and he said, look, he said, you know what, we got a pretty good team here, and I'm not going to let you mess this thing up. And now his verbiage was a little stronger than that, but you got to have the wise counsel around you and those that have been there before you to help educate you and navigate through some of the tough decisions.
Dayton Moore's new book, More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. Okay, this is interesting to me, Dayton. You get the right people in place, and then you wanted to build what you call synergy between two departments, scouting and player development. I'm not this deep into baseball to understand that these problems between these two organizations, these two departments, are common and oftentimes can become a cancer on the team. Why? Explain that to me.
If you're going to build a championship organization, you have to have great synergy between scouting and player development. It's the scout's vision for the player, what the player is going to become. And then the scout turns the player over to your development team, and your development team has to carry out that division. Well, it's a huge challenge to make it to the major leagues. Most players obviously fail. And you don't want to get an environment where the scout's blaming the player development people, or the player development people are saying, well, the player couldn't play. Of course I can't make this guy better. And the scout's saying, you know what, this guy could play when I put him on the plane. And now, 2-3 years later, you know, we gave this guy a lot of money and he's not reaching the ceiling because you changed his approach or you changed his grip or his delivery or the medical team didn't keep him healthy. So you've got to eliminate those things. So we've tried to make sure that scouting is the greatest defender of player development and player development is the greatest defender of scouting. In one word, it's accountability. Mm-hmm. And our people they're accountable for the decisions they make.
You know, your attention to detail even went so far as to focus on the clubhouse at the time when you arrived. You thought it was kind of bland. So you did what?
Environment's crucial. Jeff Davenport, who in my mind has a great feel for that. He was an ex-player. And Jeff went to work on changing the environment in the clubhouse, whether the carpet, the pictures on the wall, just the atmosphere, the food. You know, we've got a full-time chef that we have, the travel, the accommodations in the hotels. I mean, it's all very important if you want players to function together, live together over 162 games, 9.5, 10 months of the year, the environment's got to be crucial. They got to want to be a part of that. And you want players to lounge around before and after in the clubhouse, talk about the game, and spend time together. And Jeff and his staff have done a terrific job in creating that environment.
Dayton Moore is here from the Kansas City Royals. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Okay, so you focus heavily on building the organization, Dayton, and then you made the monumental decision to go outside the organization to pick up perhaps the most important player in the franchise, which was Will Shields, the pitcher who was with us for a couple of years. What was it like for you to pull the trigger on such a pivotal trade like that, that you knew was going to be controversial for years to come because we gave up a great young hitter, a kid named Will Myers?
Well, we did, and we knew that was going to be very controversial. But we also knew that if we didn't get pitching on the field, the young, talented players that we all knew we realized we had, the Salvador Perez's, the Moustakas, the Hosmers, the Escobars, the Lorenzo Cain's, even Billy Butler and Alex Gordon, they weren't going to become the talents that we all envisioned they would become unless we started playing meaningful games. We needed them to have to concentrate and prepare each day to win a championship.
If they weren't winning, they weren't close to winning, they weren't going to give you everything they had.
They couldn't. And we couldn't do that unless we had pitching. Pitching is what keeps you in the game. It puts the game in rhythm. If you're standing out on the field for 30 and 40 minutes why other teams score and runs. It just gets the game out of rhythm. And obviously the players, those position players, aren't going to be able to perform offensively.
Yeah.
And they're always playing catch up and they're trying to do too much. And it just takes everything out of rhythm. James Shields, Wade Davis put us in a position where we could tilt the field a little bit more in our favor by having that impact pitching.
Yeah, I think I called him Will Shields. That's the Kansas City Chiefs guy, right? I know the difference, yeah. But so when you pulled the trigger on that trade, I mean, were you nervous? Were you thinking that the organization was teetering on that decision, Dayton?
Well, the first thing you try to do is build a consensus among your folks, and very rarely does that happen. But
was it this case?
Oh no, we couldn't. We didn't have a consensus. We had people within the organization. I went back and forth from time to time. Nope, we're going to keep Will Myers. We're going to trade. We're going to do this deal. We're not going to do this deal. But the bottom line is, we knew. And ultimately, I had to press that leadership button and say, you know what, this is what we're going to do going forward. We need pitching, and our goal from day one was to get a group of young players to the major leagues, a talented group that wanted to win, and then do everything we could to support their efforts in winning a championship. And Will Myers was not in the major leagues yet. Talented player. He's won Rookie of the Year the following year. He's going to be a great player in the major leagues for a long time. But we had a commitment to this group. We had a commitment to our fans. Remember, when we went around Kansas City, we talked about what our plan was going to be, and those weren't just words. I mean, we were convicted in following this plan, and moving Will Myers to improve the major league team was what we had to do to put the final pieces in place to hopefully win a championship.
I was struck again reading your new good book, More Than a Season, that the negotiations on this trade went on all night. 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock a.m. phone calls.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? Even the lead up, all the prep work, you know, it actually started in about July of that year when we knew we were going to have to make some type of deal. And we knew that Tampa was probably going to trade one of their very impactful pitchers. And but, you know, you go back and forth, you talk, you analyze everything. And that's why I say all the time, there's no question anybody in the media is going to surprise me with, because I've asked those questions, those same questions that I'm going to get asked. I've asked them multiple ways, different to different people, over and over and over, to get the answers that we're looking for to ultimately, you know, come to a conclusion to make a decision.
So when a general manager like you pulls the trigger on a trade like that, Dayton, are you 90% sure? Are you 80% sure? I mean, what's in your mind in the moment you say we're going to go?
It's a little more than 50%. Very rarely do I sit there and say, yeah, I'm 100% convicted. This is what we've got to do. I mean, there's things that I'm...
That's a scary place to be,
Dayton. It's the same way, you know, in the draft. I mean, if you take 50 players in the draft, if you take 50 of them and 5 of them make it to the major leagues, you're doing pretty good. I mean,
like a trade, you don't know how a pitcher's going to perform
really
the next year
you
or
really
two.
You really don't. And mm-hmm. But you want to try to identify matchups with other organizations. You want it to be a win-win for everybody. And so, you know, in the deal we did with Milwaukee, where Zach Greinke went to Milwaukee, we got Alcides Escobar, Jake Odorizzi, and Lorenzo Cain. That was a deal that worked for everybody. It helped us long-term. It helped Milwaukee. Getting Zach Greinke, a Cy Young Award winner, helped them get back to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the deal we did with Tampa accomplished what they needed to accomplish in us as well.
You know, some more contemporary things. Toward the end of last year's regular season, the Braves, your old team, were shaking things up, including looking for a new GM. Did they come knocking on your door?
You know, we were so focused on what we were doing here in Kansas City, and I think that John really respected that. And, you know, this is where we wanted to be. This is where our family wanted to be. And there was no formal permission asked of our interest level. And,
but they were interested.
Well, truthfully, I'm not sure. I mean,
you get
certain window, you know, you get
your
certain.
Smile. I can see the smile coming on your face. No. Now you're laughing.
No.
Yeah, come on.
You're making me laugh. No, no, we were so focused on what we had to do here, and the timing just wasn't right. And, you know, oftentimes when you get at this level, it's something that maybe if I would have pursued it, they might have had some interest. But we were just so focused on what we had to do in Kansas City. And this community, Steve, has been so faithful to us. Our ownership has been, Mr. Glass and Dan have been so faithful to us. And, you know, we were just focused on what we need to do here. Our family's thriving. And, you know, I couldn't imagine being any other place than here in Kansas City.
You know, does the team feel an added weight now to continue its winning ways? Now that you've been to the World Series, is there a new pressure this year that, hey, you got to keep it going?
you always feel pressure. You want to go out and play and do well every single night.
Sure.
And but truthfully, you know, I was talking to Lisa in the green room, and
yeah.
I was, you know, we have so much fun every single day in what we do. This is a blessing to be in baseball and to work in this game. And you know, we enjoy all aspects. Of course, we want to win, but you know, I'm like the rest of our fans. I love watching this group of players play. I love watching them compete. I love to see the authenticity of it, the transparency of which they attack the game, and the way they interact and communicate with our fans. And that's the beauty of sports, and that's what sports and athletics can do to a community. It unites them. It brings togetherness, and that's why I have so much joy in what we've accomplished. There's more kids playing baseball today in Kansas City than there was 4, 5, 6 years ago. That's a special thing.
You know, two things happened as this season began, and you know them way better than I. One, injuries began to stack up. Greg Holland, Rios, Escobar. I'm wondering how much worry does that cause to have key players go down so early in the season like this?
Well, you need to stay healthy. The team that's going to win this year is going to stay healthy. But fortunately, we've had some depth. Christian Colon stepped up, played really well for us. Paulo Orlando has done the same. Ryan Mattson, what he's meant to our bullpen. The steadiness of a Jason Frazier, the continued dominance of Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis thus far has been very good. Franklin Morales has came in and pitched some big innings. And so, you know, we're not a push-button club. This is not a perfect it's not necessarily the most talented team in baseball, but they cover for one another, they care. And the fact that they're a great team, and I think potentially they have a chance to be the most talented team in baseball as they continue to progress and improve, because there's very few, if any, of our players, I think, has reached their ceiling as a talent.
And then the season begins, and your players are getting hit a lot. They're batting. They're getting hit with lots of fastballs in places you don't want to get hit. Why?
Well, I think, truthfully, there's only been about four that I think were intentional. There's two reasons I think it's happening. One, teams are trying to, you know, pitch us inside, and that's what you try to do. I mean, you got to pitch inside if you're going to win. And the fact that a lot of pitchers don't spend a lot of time practicing the art of pitching inside, they miss a little bit. And guys get hit. There's no fear in a major league hitter for the most part. I mean, they're up there and they're up there to, you know, to hurt you, and they make a lot of money on their ability to hit. And the other part of that is, you know, we're a speed team, and when you're on first base, you know, a lot of pitchers incorporate what we call a quick step or a slide step, and when that happens, sometimes you don't get the ball out in time, and your arm drags, and you'll miss arm side towards the hitter, and, you know, guys will get hit. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things.
Because the pitcher's trying to get the ball to home plate more quickly so the catcher can throw out the potential base stealers, what you're talking about.
You said it. Yep,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So are you concerned about this?
Well, I don't want to see our guys get hit. I mean, obviously, Alcides Escobar is on the DL and Alex Rios is on the DL, so it is a concern. But it's part of the game. We're not going to make excuses for it. You know, we're going to manage it, and we're going to get better and get these guys back healthy, and, you know, we'll just go out and continue to play.
Sam Mellinger from The Star wrote a column saying that the Royals tend to celebrate a little bit too much, show a little bit too emotion on the field. Other teams don't like it.
Probably not, but it's kind of permeates throughout professional sports, and Major League Baseball has always been kind of conservative. But, you know, this group of players grew up. It's an ESPN generation. They're used to watching highlights. When we grew up as kids, we watched Monday Night Baseball, Saturday game of the week. We had to go to a ballpark, we didn't have all the highlights. These kids grow up with all the emotion, and they see it, and that's what they know. And it's throughout Major League Baseball. It's not just the Kansas City Royals. I mean, Torrey Hunter hit a big home run the other night, and you know he's showing emotion and a flipping his bat. And of course, these guys are the greatest competitors in the world for our sport. And you know, emotion are going to run high at times. It's going to be intense, and it should be.
Dayton Moore's new book is More Than a Season, Building a Championship Culture. It was written with by Matt Foulkes as well, and appreciate you very much coming in, and good luck the rest of the season. It's awfully fun to watch, Dayton. Attendance up 51%.
Isn't it great?
This time compared to last year, 51%,
the
paper
said
today.
Our fans are super. Great support, and you know, appreciate you having me on, Steve. Thank you.
You bet.